Hey, Dan, we're back. It's us. We're here.
Oh, good.
It's me. Here. I'm calling.
It's good to be.
Dan, it's Jason. I'm calling you for a podcast that is secret
leave
for subscribers.
Message.
No.
After the beep.
Beep. Yeah, I know you try that with everyone. I know it's you, Dan.
I am a robot. Oh. Please do not leave a message.
New Six Colors magazine.
Issue 2. Twice as good as the first issue. I think that's how that works,
interesting.
Right?
Interesting. No pressure. No pressure there. So we still have some segments in it. You wrote a couple of things. I wrote a couple of things. People keep asking me about my server. I think one of the things that I try very hard to sort of like keep everything general and try to understand how it's going to serve everybody else. And then I will mention something that I do or a piece of hardware that I bought. And everybody's like, oh, tell me about that. Tell me about that thing you got. And I'm like, really? Do you want to hear about my thing? Cause it's just for, I didn't buy it because I think it's for everybody. I bought it because of my own personal needs. And they're like, no, tell us about it. Tell us about it. So
there are some levels of deep, intense geekery, I think, amongst our listeners, which is great because I think we, as enthusiasts of that sort, often find ourselves going down rabbit holes where we're like, you know, 6 web pages deep into trying to figure out how to configure some little service. And we think, who else would ever be interested in this? And it turns out lots of people.
Yeah, you got to, I think, eventually accept that writing about stuff that you do is probably going to interest somebody. And the nice thing about the web is that, you know, if it doesn't, you just skip over it. But you see, there's probably somebody out there who is intrigued by it. So when I mentioned that I swapped the SSD or I put an SSD into my Mac Mini server that I have, I got a lot of people saying, oh, Mac Mini server, tell me about that. What do you have? What do you, you know, what do you use it for? And so in the Six Colors magazine piece, I wrote about, I made a little bulleted list of all the things that it does now. Although I realized the funny thing I realized is that if you think of my home server as like a person, like a worker, it has worn many outfits and it has had many jobs over the years, because originally I think it was a beige G3 Power Mac that I got from the office, and then it was eventually it was my hand-me-down Sawtooth Power Mac G4. And then from there, I think it ended up being my first Mac Mini, an original Mac Mini. And then now I'm on my second. It's a 2011 Mac Mini. Yeah, so I've had 4 different computers. And the job that it was doing, that first server was doing, when it was literally like, hey, I got a copy of Mac OS X server. I should try it out. I'll just set it up at home on my slow DSL connection. Bad idea. And what that job it did then and the job it does now have almost nothing in common. So it's like over the, whatever, 15 years, 10, 12 years, something like that. It's a long time. It's probably like 15 years that I've had a server in my house, you know, that career has been a bunch of different careers. It's evolved over time, and it doesn't change like monolithically, like you throw one server out and bring in a new server and it's totally different. That hasn't happened. It's just like stuff keeps coming and going over time.
Yeah, and I'm interested because your setup is very similar to my setup. I also have a Mac Mini server, also a 2011 Mac Mini, and I replaced an earlier Mac Mini, which I think I got from the office. And so, you know, I read that article with interest, especially because I would considered at some point doing the same thing and was kind of daunted by the instructions for it. But you went ahead and did it. So perhaps you are an inspiration for me.
It was kind of terrifying, and I did break the infrared transceiver, which totally doesn't matter.
I saw that as a feature because I actually have a problem where, because mine sits below my TV, it uses the same remote frequency as the Apple TV.
As the Apple TV, yeah.
So I would occasionally use the Apple TV remote, and it would start like launching iTunes on the Mac Mini. There's no way to turn that off because it's like hard-coded into it. You have to, like, someone had written like a patch at one point that, like, for disabling it. But yeah, it's kind of nutty. So, but I've been using it recently and found that it is just like dragging.
It's
slow.
So
and
slow.
I can't figure it, like, and I just came to the conclusion, like you, that it must be the drive, because it's got a decent amount of RAM and a pretty fast. I think mine has an i7 in it, I think. So it's not like it's any slouch on the CPU front, but it is just like dog slow whenever I connect to it to do things. Actually, yesterday, I spent an insane amount of time because I was trying to verify the backup I have of that, which is a super duper backup. So I, you know, restarted the computer, booted it from that backup, And then it was incredibly slow trying to like do anything to like, all right, backup loaded. Great. Everything seems to be in roughly the same condition. Can I, you know, switch back my start disks? And for some reason, there's some sort of weird corruption or permissions thing where I couldn't change the startup disk. It wouldn't load the startup disk control panel. And I was like, so I spent a while trying to figure out if there was another way to do that. And I'm like trying to connect different Bluetooth peripherals and nothing's working. I finally plugged in a USB mouse because it was the only thing I had that could actually get recognized. So it took me a half an hour to restart a computer on a different startup disk. And yeah, I just felt like I'm glad I verified my backup, but maybe that wasn't quite worth it.
Yeah, the truth of having computers in the mid-teens, which is where we are now, is if you have a computer with a spinning drive in it that, you know, that's not part of a fusion drive or something like that, that is the thing that's slowing down your computer, almost certainly. If you have a remotely modern computer, that is what is slowing it down, because everything else has gotten so fast. And the reason they put spinning drives in computers is because they're way cheaper. They're way cheaper. Apple still is selling spinning drives in new Retina iMacs, which I've ranted about before, and it's terrible, but at the same time, that's why it is they can make it as cheap as it is, because
and they give you the capacities you want too.
Right,
a terabyte solid state drive is decent, but it's hugely expensive.
Incredibly expensive, right? So but what that does mean is that if you've got, like we do, these 2011 Mac Minis with a spinning drive, and it's a little tiny, you know, it's a spinning laptop drive, it's not a fast drive to begin with, even among spinning drives. Mm-hmm. And that if you can go through the essentially disassembling the entire computer, which is what you have to do with the Mac Mini, you can make a radical difference. Just it's transformative in that computer's functionality by putting in an SSD, or doing what I did, which was I actually bought a little kit that let me add, there's room for a second disk I added an SSD to the spinning disk and mated them using core storage and turned them into basically a fusion drive. And Apple recognizes, the OS recognizes it as a fusion drive, and the fusion drives system is really clever that Apple built, because they try to prioritize your files and they put the stuff that you want fast access to on the SSD, and they move like the big files, and the ones you don't access so much, those sort of get migrated to the slow hard drive, and so you get space and you get some speed.
Yeah, and even more than that, I mean, so a couple of years ago, my dad, his computer is a 2008 MacBook, the one-off aluminum MacBook with no FireWire.
Oh, yeah.
And it was getting a bit long in the tooth. I noticed it was a bit slow. So for Christmas, I pulled out, that one's very easy, that actually has a removable drive in it. So
yes.
I pulled it out and put in an SSD, and he's still using that computer. Mm-hmm. It made it super speedy, and it's a, you know, now roughly 8-year-old computer. And in fact, this year he broke the hinge locks on it broke. So like if you opened it, it would just flop open like a magazine, essentially. And so he actually had to go in and get it fixed. I was like, Dad, just buy a new computer. You know, it's so much better now. And he's like, it's so expensive. He takes it in. He got those hinge things fixed. He had to go to a third party for it because Apple no longer has parts for it.
Yeah.
But he got fixed for like $100 or something. And it still works. So he's still using it.
Yeah. My mom's laptop that I upgraded, the same deal. I pulled the drive out and put in an SSD. And, you know, again, yeah, you could buy a new computer. But like to get a Mac Mini today with an SSD is like $700. It's not cheap. I spent $200 or $300 and got, I think it's even more than seven, I think it's like 900 with the SSD. It's a lot. And I spent like $200 or $300, I think maybe $200 on my little project. And yeah, I had to take it apart, and that was kind of scary. But so anyway, I do lots of things on that server, and similar to you, and I listed them in the bullet points. But these days, a lot of it is it's got a big disk attached to it. It's got a Drobo 5D attached to it, so it's a huge amount of storage space. So it's my file server. I can leave it on. I don't leave my iMac on all the time, so it's the always on device.
Yep.
And it's attached to the big storage, and I've got gigabit Ethernet. So when I want to copy huge podcast files and stuff like that onto that disk or copy them off, it moves really fast. So I'm using it for that, and all my media files are on there. And then it's running a bunch of software. It's running the weather station software that I have, because I have a weather station in my backyard. It's got Plex. It's got a couple of music servers for Logitech's Squeezebox stuff and for Sonos. It's got It's got OS X Server on there, so it's running Time Machine, so I can do Time Machine backups directly to it. It's got Crash Plan, because I'm backing everything up that's on the Drobo using Crash Plan. It's got iTunes, which means I can access my iTunes library from my iMac, my complete local library if my internet is slower down, which is kind of great. And also you can use the computer's channel in Apple TV and get all your files on the drive there. And listen to or watch those files that way. So yeah, I think
the only thing you don't seem to have actively running that I wrote about in the past was a VPN, which I did go through the hassle of setting up. And I still get questions from people about that who are interested in that setup. And I found it was more of an interesting project than anything I've gotten like a ton of use of right now, because my computers are already accessible. But it would certainly up the security on some of the remote access stuff I do. But it is handy. It's handy to have. And I like having it, you know, accessible. I have a Plex library on there that I use for a lot of stuff.
Yep, me too.
And it works great. And I agree with you. You know, it's interesting you pointed out if you were starting from scratch today, you might use an NAS instead.
Yeah.
And that's something I've been thinking about more recently, just because it's more of a way to add sort of cheap network storage to my home setup, and as a backup for, you know, stuff, because I do use, you know, I back up my Mac Mini, which has sort of Canonical, you know, Photos backups, iTunes backups, that kind of stuff. But I also know that, you know, the photo library itself is not a backup. I need to have another copy of that just in case. So maybe there's a another solution in there for that. But I'm kind of at the moment where it's like, well, do I really want to add another device to the network? Seems like it could be a pain, but we'll have to see.
Well, yeah, and that's why, rather than buying a NAS, which is network attached storage device, it's basically a computer that runs a whole bunch of hard drives, but it's like a really smart hard drive rather than a computer that you attach hard drives to. Rather than do that, I ended up with a device that is this Drobo that I've got is not the network version, it's just the disk version. And so I just added outboard storage to my Mac Mini rather than adding another device, especially since then, if I also kept the Mac Mini, that would be extra like confusing, I think, and maybe overkill, because then is one device serving some, and is the Mac Mini mounting the other device over the network, and is that inefficient? And instead it's just, you know, I'm comfortable with the Mac Mini, and now I've got this, you know, box that's full of hard drives, and it's fast, and it's got some redundancy, and it's enormous. It's just an enormous amount of hard drive space, which I love, because I do have all these big files for the podcast and all that, and I just keep them on the Drobo, and that's good. That's good. But, you know, for a lot of other people, if you're not doing this, or you have an older device, an older Mac or something that you're using as a server, a NAS device might be the best thing to do, depending on what you're doing. Because the nice thing about them is that it's an intelligent hard drive on your network. It can run software. You kind of usually control it using a web form. And it can do a lot of the same stuff that my computer is doing. So,
and if you want something easier for like setting up like a Batwork, a backup
a Batwork?
On your network,
is that for Batman? Batwork? Is that Batman's network?
That's how Batman backs up all of his stuff on a Batwork.
On a Batwork.
If you're not, you know, I think the biggest problem. I love that Apple included Time Machine. I remember when that came out and everybody was like, backups. Why are people so excited about backups? It's like, no one backs up their stuff.
Yeah.
And now I feel like a lot of people do, but it's still kind of a pain because you gotta, especially if you have a laptop and you have to like unplug and replug your backup drive, or and then you forget about it, etc., etc. Having something that's always just there, ready to get, like, you know, ready to let you back up all your stuff onto it, is just, it'll just take the hassle of that, and it'll give you peace of mind. Let me tell you, I think that's a huge thing. So, you know, if you are just looking for something small that does that kind of thing, an NAS seems like a pretty good solution.
Yeah, I think so. So there are options there. But anyway, in the magazine, I wrote about that. You wrote about Hawaii, which we actually talked about in the last episode. So it's sort of almost like a follow-on from the last secret podcast about the stuff that you used in Hawaii. And there's a nice picture in there of you sitting on a beach with a palm tree behind you.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, no, I miss it. It's true. Yeah, I think one of the things that was interesting about that was how... And this is something I think I've struggled with, you know, recently with technology, is how set in my ways I am. And like, part of me was like, oh, you know, I'm going on vacation. Should I be downloading all these new apps? Are there things I should be trying? And instead, I, you know, fell back on using the same like half a dozen apps that I probably use when I'm at home, too. And so I think there's an interesting question in the difficulty of displacing the apps that we already use. After some time, you know, sometimes those apps can get, you know, less functional, or better competitors can come out that replace them. But I feel like so many of the apps that I use on a daily basis end up being things that are just sort of, I'm so set in my ways that I don't really consider things that challenge them. And so, you know, I am still using Tweetbot. I'm still using the built-in mail client, right? I'm still using Yelp, you know, and I'm still using even the built-in maps, actually, much more than Google Maps. But there are very few new apps that sort of break their way into the my most used apps collection. Even though I, you know, keep an eye out for things and try to find new apps to use and see what's going on, I feel like in certain ways, it's been a while since I found a new app that was so mind-blowing that's like, wow, this is something I'm going to use every day. But it does also a testament to how solid these devices and the software is that it's become part of our daily life, and we are, you know, very comfortable with the way that it works. And always, you know, when we're traveling, it's just taken as fact that you have your camera on your phone, and you can get your email, and I can get my boarding passes and all that. So I thought that was it's very interesting for me as a perspective of someone who writes about technology to feel like, well, you know, like, what is the next big app that's going to come along and actually change the way that I do things? And I don't know that I've found one in a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's also a testament to how good the stuff is that's out there, right? Like, you know, it's so solid that I don't find myself thinking like, oh, there's this thing I can't do. Like, let me go find an app.
Sometimes for me, it's tactical. It is. I mean, talking about vacations, it is. I get in a new situation and I think, what can I do? How can I apply this technology to solve the issues that we're coming up with? So when we went on our trip, our car trip this summer, I used Yelp. Way more than I'd ever used Yelp before, but it was helpful in finding nearby restaurants that people thought were generally good, and we didn't go to a chain restaurant for a meal basically at
right.
all on
yeah.
a 2-week road trip, and we didn't have we had one meal where the food was fine, but the service was terrible, but all the rest of them were just great. And I don't use Yelp day to day, but it was one of those moments where it's like, aha, I have a tool that I can apply to this need that we have. And there are a couple others like that, you know, are other travel kind of themed apps. So, you know, so for me, a lot of times it's that, which is you get a problem and you think, is there a way for me to solve this problem
right.
with software? And you find it and you have that revelation, rather than it being, you know, somebody comes up with a new app and you go, oh my God, this solves a problem that I didn't
right.
even know I had.
Yeah, then my most successful moments are definitely when I sit down and think about where are the pain points in my life and what can I do to sort of ease those by finding some tool or some process that will let me get that thing that I need to do all the time faster. And right now I feel like there isn't anything where it's like, oh man, that's a significant point in my life that's just like crying out for automation. My bottleneck is somewhere else.
Yeah. We got Apple report card results in the magazine too. People can check that out. I basically wrote another version of the story that I wrote on the website, and this quotes Six Color subscribers. So that's awesome, and thanks to all of the Six Color subscribers who participated in that. It's about 198, I think, is the count when I made the graph. And I hope people enjoy seeing what their fellow subscribers say, at least a little bit. The answers were very similar to the ones that the pundits came up with. And I would say, on one level, I'm encouraged by that, because I feel like that that means that they're in the right direction. And these scores were done and the comments were given before that story was published. So it's telling that the comments are very similar. You could argue that that subscribers and readers to Six Colors are in the sphere where the pundits are putting out their opinions, and therefore they're shaping opinion. But I think it is meaningful that everybody sort of has similar feelings about things like the Apple Watch. And there are places where, like developer relations, that I think the general public is sort of like, I don't know, I'm not a developer, and that's a fair point. But in a lot of other places, I felt like the fact that they're all ranked similarly from top to bottom is very interesting. That sort of every category,
yeah.
every group, the non-subscribers, the subscribers, and the pundits all ordered the answers in the same average score. It's the exact same order. And that means that people's feelings about Apple's product lines, from sort of most positive to most negative, are essentially the same, which is it goes iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple TV, and Apple Watch in that order.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be seeing these results of Tim Cook, of course, because I'm sure he's very interested to hear.
I'm sure. I assume he's a Six Color subscriber under a pseudonym.
Fair point,
Hi, Tim.
Fair point. Jim Cook.
Jim Sheff.
Yeah. Wow, that's smooth, Tim. Yep. Well, no, it is interesting. I think you're right that's so universal, is that we all, I think, there are things that clearly Apple has focused a lot of attention on, and those are places where they've historically done very well. But there have also been places where their attention has been lacking in recent months and years. And so it's very clear from this that I think that is felt across the ecosystem. I mean, as you say, there are a lot of people, probably general users of, you know, I don't want to say there are a lot of people who aren't Six Color subscribers, but there's probably a couple out there, just sort of general mainstream users who might have a different view on it. But it is interesting how often I talk to people, my friends who are, you know, not as techie or techie in different areas, and hear some of the similar complaints or occasionally different ones. But it is interesting how often similar things do come up. So there is something telling about that.
What you want to explain your back page column?
Oh, clearly just needs no explanation.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
No, I think this is I railed on this in a recent episode of another podcast, which might be out by the time that this gets released. Which is just how dumb and asinine I think the attempts to legislate encryption backdoors, you know, for the government are. The New York State recently has been considering a law that would fine makers of smartphones and other devices for not providing a backdoor, and for every unit of their product that they sell that does not contain the ability for law enforcement essentially to go in and look at your data. And I think it betrays a fundamental misunderstanding or just lack of understanding by the people who are running our government. And it's just, it's mind-blowing to me that in this day and age when technology has become so pervasive, that not only do you, I can understand being ignorant about a particular issue or about how something works, but to not consult people who actually understand this and sort of, you know, realize from that what you're asking will just fundamentally destroy so much of what all our technology operates on. It's just, it strikes me as a willful ignorance that is kind of distressing to see in our publicly elected officials. So I guess I was getting a little snarky about that, but I think it's a fair point. I mean, honestly, if you're a politician and you are in favor of these kinds of backdoors, I think it's important to realize you're a public figure and this is probably going to bite you before it bites the rest of us. So, hey, maybe consider that when you're looking at these laws.
All right, well, that's the back page, and that wraps it up for this Six Colors Secret Subscriber Podcast. Thanks for subscribing to Six Colors. For Dan Morin, I have been Jason Snell. See you next time.